By the grace of God, we'd like to consider the next chapter in the Leviticus study, which is chapter 25. It has to do with the Sabbaths for the land and the time of Jubilee. In the previous chapter, we considered the perpetual offerings of the children of Israel, of the oil and bread, and then we saw the blasphemer's punishment for blaspheming the name of the Lord, a very serious matter. So, in Leviticus chapter 25, rather lengthy chapter, we'll do our best to be brief, but say enough to try to make the scriptures clear. We have through verses 1 through 7 a Sabbath for the land. The land is to rest every seventh year, and then it moves into the time of Jubilee. So let's read it, verse 1. And the Lord spake unto Moses in Mount Sinai, saying, Speak unto the children of Israel, and say unto them, When ye come into the land which I give you, then shall the land keep a Sabbath to the Lord. Obviously, the words speak unto the children of Israel tells us to whom this word applies. It does not apply to the nations. And what we learn when we pay attention to the pronouns ye's and you's, these, thou's, such, is that this word that's given to Israel isn't an individual observance. It's a corporate observance. They are all to come together and do the same things at the same time. And then you read the words, when you come into the land. Now, that's perspective. Obviously, they're in the in Mount Sinai, the region around about there. They've not left there. They've been there for some time now. And so, it's prophetic. It's anticipating the time when they'll come into the land promised to them, the land of Canaan specifically. So that's in the time ahead. So verse 3, they're going to keep or observe a Sabbath to the Lord, and that is to let the land rest. And so he describes it. Verse 3, 6 years thou shalt sow thy field, and 6 years thou shalt prune thy vineyard, and gather in the fruit thereof. But in the seventh year shall be a Sabbath of rest unto the land, a Sabbath for the Lord. Thou shalt neither sow thy field, nor prune thy vineyard. That which groweth of its own accord of thy harvest, thou shalt not reap, neither gather the grapes of thy vine undressed, for it is a year of rest unto the land. The land was not to be tilled, it was not to be sown, and it was not to be reaped. And the Sabbath of the land shall be meat for you, or food, for thee, and for thy servant, and for thy maid, and for thy hired servant, and for thy stranger that sojourns with thee, and for thy cattle, and for the beasts that are in thy land, shall all the increase thereof be meat or food. It either means that the Sabbath of the land shall be meat for you, that meaning that which springs up of itself, everyone, rich and poor, possessors of lands and those without lands, could freely eat of that which grows of itself. It wasn't worked, but it does appear that they were not to, I think the sense is, not to go out and bring it in and store it up. Or, it just means that by observing the Sabbath of the land, this cycle and rest shall actually make the land more productive. I'm having a hard time telling which it is. So at least one of these two things. Now, the Jubilee, we now begin with verse 8. It's a 7 years times 7 years cycle plus a year, which that particular year is the year of Jubilee. So verses 8 through 19 describe this. And thou shalt number 7 Sabbaths of years unto thee, 7 times 7 years. And the space of the 7 Sabbaths of years shall be unto thee 49 years. So there's no misunderstanding what is meant here. Then shalt thou cause the trumpet of the Jubilee to sound on the 10th day of the 10th month. In the Day of Atonement shall ye make the trumpet sound throughout all your land. Now, we read in the previous chapter concerning the feasts, several feasts, that there was a feast of trumpets. A trumpet would sound on the new year. Now, when I say the new year, there was a religious new year and a civil new year. In this case, I might be mistaken and may be confused, but in the 7th month began this particular new year. Whether civil or religious, I cannot remember. But the trumpet sounds at this time on the first day of the 7th month. And it was a call to a general assembly in Leviticus chapter 24, verse 24. And then you see, 10 days later, on the Day of Atonement, they would sound the trumpet again. It's a general assembly. And this is the Day of Atonement. They'd make this trumpet sound throughout all your land. It is something that calls the nation of Israel together to observe this day. And at this point, to especially call them together to observe the time of Jubilee. It says in verse 10, "And ye shall hallow the 50th year, and proclaim liberty throughout all the land unto all the inhabitants thereof." Particularly, it appears to apply especially and perhaps only to the Hebrews. It says, "It shall be a jubilee unto you." And now, the scripture is very good about this. It explains what that is. "And ye shall return every man unto his possession, and ye shall return every man unto his family." There is restitution of the inheritance to the man, or if it's this way, every man is restored from having sold himself back to his own family. This is a time, a proclamation of liberty throughout all the land that begins with the sounding of the trumpet. In verse 11, "A jubilee shall that 50th year be unto you." Notice the plural. It's a corporate observance. "Ye," plural, "shall not sow, neither reap that which grows of itself, nor gather the grapes in it, of thy vine undressed." Again, it's a replicating, if you will, the Sabbath rest for the land. Jubilee is doing the same thing. Verse 12. "Why? For it is the Jubilee. It shall be holy unto you. Ye shall eat the increase thereof out of the field." A man named John Gill wrote this, and it's true. When you consider the Sabbath rest of the land, 6 years laboring, working it, and then resting the seventh, and then here you have the Jubilee, which 7 times 7 years, 49 years, you would have had a Sabbath rest for the land, and then back to back, that would have been with the time of Jubilee. There's no getting around it. So you have 2 years of rest for the land. And this man, John Gill, wrote, because 2 years would come together in which were no sowing and reaping, but that God that could cause the earth to bring forth fruit for 3 years, verse 21 we'll read, could make it bring forth enough for 4 years. I think it's true. The Lord blessed the earth to produce enough in the sixth to carry them through to the time, through harvest time, ahead during the Sabbath rest of the land. And so Israel could live of the spontaneous productions of the earth. Plus, the Lord would increase the sixth year produce of the field, so to cover that period of time amply. He'll supply the need if Israel will simply trust the Lord and do His word. In verse 13, in the year of this Jubilee, ye shall return every man unto his possession. And then we read how it's applied. Jubilee will regulate all land transactions. Verse 14. If thou sell aught unto thy neighbor, or buyest aught of thy neighbor's hand, ye shall not oppress one another. According to the number of years after the Jubilee, thou shalt buy of thy neighbor, and according unto the number of years of the fruits, he shall sell unto thee. All transactions fall into this 49-year space of time. It's all regulated, buying and selling, particularly property in this instance, and we'll see Hebrews that had to sell themselves or are sold for various reasons to others to serve out their time. It's all regulated in this 49-year window. On the 50th year, restoration is made, a great liberty. The property is restored and the people are restored to their families. It goes on in verse 16, according to the multitude of years, thou shalt increase the price thereof, and according to the fewness of years, in other words, in this time span of 49 years, thou shalt diminish the price of it. For according to the number of the years of the fruits, does he sell unto thee. If property is sold in the beginning of a Jubilee, let's say Jubilee just ended, so you have a full 49 years ahead before the next Jubilee, and on the 50th, then you're going to get this price, the highest price. If you, for example, sold 10 years after the last Jubilee, so there's 40 years remaining, then you're going to get 40 years worth of a price, according to the value of the property and the fruit that it potentially could yield during that time. And buying it back was regulated the same way. In verse 18, wherefore ye shall do my statutes and keep my judgments and do them, and ye shall dwell in the land safely, and the land shall yield her fruit, and ye shall eat your fill, and dwell therein in safety. Should Israel obey this statute and keep this judgment of the Lord. They would dwell in the land securely. But we do know, and we won't read it now, but Jeremiah chapter 34, verses 8 through 17, lay out for us that one of the reasons that Israel was removed from their land and taken into captivity was because they had violated the law of Jubilee that we're reading of here. Now, in verses 20 through 22, there is a question. If you've thought through, if you put yourself in the Israelites' place as you read this text, and you become one who tills the ground and sows the field and expects a harvest. Now, we have a problem. Logically speaking, a field left to itself like that isn't going to produce enough, probably, to feed us and all that is about us. So a question does arise. It seems to be maybe some anxiety, but properly so. And the Lord comforts his people with this, with an answer. The question is anticipated about how to make do when the land rests and there are no crops to be brought in. So he says here in verse 20, "And if ye shall say, what shall we eat the seventh year? Behold, we shall not sow nor gather in our increase. Then I will command my blessing upon you in the sixth year, and it shall bring forth fruit for 3 years. And you shall sow the eighth year, and eat yet of old fruit until the ninth year. Until her fruits come in, ye shall eat of the old store." Now, what we might not think about as we read this is the time of year that the land rest comes in the seventh year. It would be an enduring jubilee. It would be in the seventh month. The land will not be sown, it will not be worked, and it will not be harvested. And so, by the time this year is completed, they will not have been able to work the land and sow it for another harvest. By the time they're able to bring in the next harvest, it would bring them into the third year, which new stuff can begin to be eaten, but they would be finishing up what's called the old store. The Lord would provide for them during this time by making the land to produce extra just before they enter into the land rest. Did they believe that? Would we believe that if we were in that situation? But he would provide. Now, Jubilee now continues to be described. It's reiterating here in verse 23 that the land is released every 50 years to the proper owners, back to the family, to whoever's inheritance it is. Verse 23, "The land shall not be sold forever, for the land is mine. For ye are strangers and sojourners with me. And in all the land of your possession, ye shall grant a redemption for the land." No one should prevent the redemption of property back to the rightful owners. "If thy brother be waxen poor, and has sold away some of his possessions," meaning his parcels of property, "and if any of his kin come to redeem it, then shall he redeem that which his brother sold. We are caused to think here about Naomi in the book of Ruth. She had gone out with Elimelech, her husband, during a time of famine, went into the land of Moab, and lost everything. Naomi particularly, her husband, her sons, their property had been sold to others. Nothing. She comes back empty. And here, it's a very important point comes up. Talks about the kinsman. Now, this kinsman may redeem the loss of his relative at will. He must be able to pay the entire debt owed. And this speaks in the type of Christ, our kinsman redeemer. By his shed blood, he paid the full price of the debt of his people. Who are they? All the election of grace, and restored us to an inheritance that we lost when we fell in Adam. We fell in him, Adam, and lost it. Christ alone restored us to it. This restoration happened in a type on the Day of Atonement, Yom Kippur. The real of this type was when Christ died on the cross. And like Boaz, a type of Christ in the book of Ruth, he raised up children from the dead upon his inheritance. And so Christ did this in reality by raising up seed upon his inheritance, as it were, and it was, from the dead. So, verse 26, if the man have none to redeem it, that one that had sold it, and no one's able to redeem it, he and himself be able to redeem it. He can't. Then let, and here's how he would do it. Factoring in the time remaining until the next Jubilee, and the price that he sold it for, reducing the amount of years from the price, and he would know what it would cost him to redeem it. It's a fair transaction. Verse 26 again, if the man have none to redeem it, and himself be able to redeem it, then let him count the years of the sale thereof, and restore the overplus unto the man to whom he sold it. In other words, he owes the years remaining to Jubilee, that he may return unto his property. He can redeem it if he can in this way. It's the right way. It's a fair way. Then if he can do that, if he can pay the price to the man that has this property, then he may return to his property. Must not be prevented from that. But if he be not able to restore it to him, in other words, I can't buy this property back to myself, then that which is sold shall remain in the hand of him that hath bought it until the year of Jubilee. And in the Jubilee it shall go out, and he shall return unto his possession. Now, there are some exceptions to Jubilee, and they are the city houses. And we'll read that here. If a man sell a dwelling house in a walled city, then he may redeem it within a whole year after it is sold. Within a full year may he redeem it. Emphasizing the time frame that he has here. There's no Jubilee limitation here. He's got to do something within a year. If it be not redeemed within the space of a full year, then the house that is in the walled city shall be established forever to him that bought it throughout his generations. It shall not go out in the Jubilee. This is a permanent transaction. But the houses of the villages which have no wall round about them shall be counted as the fields of the country. They may be redeemed, and they shall go out in the Jubilee. Notwithstanding, the Levites have a little bit of a different thing here the Lord provides. Notwithstanding, the cities of the Levites and the houses of the cities of their possession may the Levites redeem at any time. In other words, unlike the Israelite brethren, they're not restricted to buying these city houses back in a year's time. They can redeem it at any time. And if a man purchase of the Levites, then the house that was sold and the city of his possession shall go out in the year of Jubilee. In other words, it's restored back in the time of Jubilee as other Israelites' property is, if it's not been redeemed beforehand. For the houses, and we're concerned about city houses, for the houses of the cities of the Levites are their possession among the children of Israel. But the field of the suburbs of their cities may not be sold. The Levites are not allowed to sell their fields around the cities, their cities. I believe they had 48 cities. I could be wrong, but that number comes to mind. Those are not to be sold, for it is their perpetual, their everlasting possession. Now, verses 35 through 38 helps others, learning how to help others without self-interest. That's an important thing here among the Israelites. And it's a great principle for us to remember in loving our brother. Or brother, in showing brotherly love. Let's consider it. If your brother be waxen poor and fallen in decay or slipped into poverty with you, in other words, among you, then thou shalt relieve him, help him. Yea, though he be a stranger or a sojourner, that he may live with thee. Take thou an explaining what we should not do to help our brother. Take no usury of him or increase, but fear thy God, that thy brother may live with thee. Deuteronomy 23, verse 19 and 20. Thou shalt not lend upon usury to thy brother, usury of money, usury of victuals, usury of anything that is lent upon usury. Unto a stranger thou mayest lend upon usury, but unto thy brother thou shalt not lend upon usury, that the Lord thy God may bless thee in all that thou settest thine hand to, in the land whither thou goest to possess it. Now, I understand this to be limited to helping a brother who is in need. Usury is not forbidden in the scriptures, but it is forbidden to be applied to those that are in need. Thou shalt not give him thy money upon usury. In the simplest terms, charging him some kind of an interest, any kind of interest for that matter, nor lend him thy victuals for increase. Self-interest. I would only help him if it profits me somehow. That's just wrong. It's, in my mind, it's wrong today. I think it's certainly not a show of proper Christian love for another. You know what, though? If someone wants to borrow money from me to forward his business enterprise or buy him a new car or something like it's really not a necessity, then hey, if he wants to pay the interest, whether he goes to the bank or borrows it from me, it really doesn't matter to me. And those kinds of things are proper. But not when we have a brother in the Lord that is in need. I mean, really, let's think about what Christ has done for us. Now, in verse 38, I am the Lord thy God, which brought you forth out of the land of Egypt to give you the land of Canaan and to be your God. If your brother, verses 39 and following, when a Hebrew comes into a hard place and has to sell himself because of debt, it may be that, now in some instances, I think it was Exodus chapter 23, somewhere in there, brethren committed crimes and they were caught and they were sold into bondage. And that was to pay make retribution for their crimes, a social matter and personal as well. And these issues could go from anywhere from generally a service of 6 years and then you release them. But some of these, as we can see here, seem to have been a lifetime commitment to serve as a servant upwards 49 years before they'd be released. So there's a mixture of this in the reading now verses 39 and following. If thy brother that dwells by thee be waxen poor and be sold unto thee, thou shalt not compel him to serve as a bond servant. He's become poor for some reason here, and in order to, perhaps for himself, for his family, he sells himself as a servant to his brother. Well, the brother that buys him is not to treat him like a bondservant of the heathen, a piece of property. That's the way it's approached here. But he's to be, yes, he did sell himself into servitude, but you treat him like he's a proper employee, a hired servant, in verse 40. Don't compel him to serve as a bondservant, but as an hired servant, and as a sojourner he shall be with you, thee, and shall serve thee unto the year of Jubilee. And then shall he depart from thee, both he and his family with him, and shall return unto his own family, and unto the possession of his fathers shall he return. They are my servants, which I brought forth out of the land of Egypt. They shall not be sold as bondmen. In other words, brethren in Israel were not to buy their brethren that came into hard times as if they were bondmen. But that purchase would be to, in so many respects, to give them an honorable way to make for the days ahead. Not some shameful thing, but he would serve as a brother, and you'd pay him properly. You'd treat him like a brother. And I think that's what the scriptures are doing here. They're protecting the children of Israel when any would come into hard times. Then he shall depart from thee, read it again, both he and his children with him, and shall return unto his own family, and unto the possession of his fathers shall he return. For they are my servants, which I brought forth out of the land of Egypt. They shall not be sold as bondmen. Thou shalt not rule over him with rigor, with hardness, with cruelty. Now, the Israelites were all too familiar with that, having just come out of Egypt. And we see that they, the Egyptians, made the children of Israel to serve with rigor. They made their lives bitter with hard bondage in Exodus chapter 1, verses 13 and 14. But the Lord says, but thou shalt not rule over him with rigor, but shalt fear thy God. Do the right thing. Both thy bondmen and thy bondmaids, which thou shalt have. The Bible doesn't condemn slavery, but notice how it's regulated. Shall be of the heathen that are round about you. Of them shall you buy bondmen and bondmaids. Moreover, of the children of the strangers that do sojourn among you, of them shall you buy, and of them, of their families that are with you, which they begat in your land, and they shall be your possession. They can become your property, but not your Hebrew brethren. And ye shall take them as an inheritance for your children. Notice the permanence of this kind of a bond slave. There is no jubilee for them. Ye shall take them as an inheritance for your children after you, to inherit them for a possession like property. They shall be your bondmen forever, but over your brethren, the children of Israel, ye shall not rule over one another with rigor. And if a sojourner or stranger wax rich by thee, these that come in and dwell in the land with you, and your brother that dwells by him wax poor, and sell himself unto the stranger or sojourner by thee, or to the stock of the stranger's family, after that he is sold, he may be redeemed again. Keep it in mind, children of Israel. One of his brethren may redeem him. Either his uncle or his uncle's son may redeem him, or any that is nigh of kin unto him of his family may redeem him, or if he be able, he may redeem himself. And he shall reckon with him that bought him from the year that he was sold to him unto the year of Jubilee, and the price of his sale shall be according to the number of years, according to the time of an hired servant shall it be with him. So you look at this 49-year period of time, however much time is involved there, you figure it out, and you have a proper transaction. In nothing over, nothing under, it is right. And it's satisfactory to everyone. If there be yet many years behind, according to them, he shall give again the price of his redemption out of the money that he was bought for. And if there remain but few years unto the year of Jubilee, then he shall count with him, and according unto his years shall he give him again the price of his redemption. As a yearly hired servant, like an employee, shall he be with him, and the other shall not rule with rigor over him in thy sight. No one who has purchased an Hebrew is allowed by the Lord to treat them harshly, cruelly. Everyone on the land is obligated to treat a Hebrew properly as an hired servant, an employee. Verse 54, and if he be not redeemed in these years, ultimately here, then he shall go out in the year of Jubilee, both he and his children with him. For unto me the children of Israel are servants. They are my servants, whom I brought forth out of the land of Egypt. I am the Lord your God. So the children of Israel were not to be lords over one another, but brethren, because they are all servants to the Lord and of the Lord. Jubilee is a great day of liberation, of property and servitude, or servants. Every one of the Hebrews are restored to their inheritance on the Day of Atonement, in that 50th year. So Christ has purchased us the election of grace to an inheritance incorruptible and undefiled, and that fades not away, Peter said in his first epistle, chapter 1, verse 4. We have been released from sin's servitude to the inheritance, and the inheritance has been released from Satan's dominion to us by our near kinsman, Jesus Christ, when he died and atoned to God by his shed blood on the cross for us. There's a lot in this chapter, and it's a long chapter, a lot of details to think about. But maybe the Lord has blessed something to our hearts in the midst of all this reading that we can take away and be greatly encouraged. We have been redeemed by the blood of Christ, and we have an inheritance reserved in heaven for us. And we're going to see that one day because of Christ. Thank you so much for your attention. God bless you.